And joining me on the phone from Taos, New Mexico is Ed Williams. Hi, Ed.
Amy, hi.
That was an incredible documentary. I mean, you really covered all angles. Congratulations on that. It's wonderful.
Thank you. It's pretty powerful. I mean, it was one of those things that kind of felt like it wrote itself almost, you know
right.
what I mean? Just
yeah.
like if you spend enough time in a place where things are just that, I mean, that's reality there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just had to write it.
Well, what was it like to research and gather audio for the story? Where did you start?
That's a good question. It was a long process. I think the most difficult part in that story was A, earning the trust of the community, and
right.
B, finding the right people to kind of illustrate what reality is for people going through heroin addiction there.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of coverage of this issue. I mean, the New York Times has written stories, NPR has written stories. Usually it's a national publication that parachutes in and writes about, you know, the heroin capital of America
right.
and gets a sexy headline and leaves. And so I think a lot of people in the community are kind of burned by the media.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to spend a lot of time up front. I dedicated, you know, about 5 weeks just for source building
wow.
and meeting people for interviews without, you know, without a microphone.
Exactly.
Just to kind of hear from them off the record mm-hmm. and try to earn some trust. So that was difficult.
So how long did it take for you to put this together?
Start to finish, it was about 7 months.
Jeez.
Yeah. The fellowship started in, I think, June or July, and mm-hmm. we just aired it in February.
Wow. You know, you said that you left out some of the people's stories that you collected. How did you choose which ones to include?
Man, I mean, it's hard, right? Like, because I guess the story kind of begins to fall into place. Like,
mm-hmm.
one scene leads to another, one theme obviously ties into the next. And there were some people who were just amazing, and I'm so disappointed I didn't get to use them, but that just really didn't fit, or that, you know, we had a more concise and clear way to express what they would have said, you know, through another
right.
character or another scene.
Right.
So it was just kind of a long process of putting together a puzzle, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a lot of the people, you know, that were, I couldn't have done with the story without, it didn't end up being in the story. So
mm-hmm.
I guess it's just how it has to work.
Well, it sounds like you learned a lot about addiction
mm-hmm.
and recovery. How did this story change you?
Wow. In a lot of ways, I guess. I mean, in terms of like the way that I think journalism can work, this was a very community-based reporting project. We had, I was working with ProPublica, on collaborating with the community, and they call it engagement reporting. Kind of like it changed my, I guess, my view of how we can write stories, because the community saw the issue differently than the news reports had said.
What do you mean?
I hope what came through was kind of what the community thought was missing, and that's, you know, things like, you know, the quiver in the addict's voice
mm-hmm.
when he can't get treatment. You know,
mm-hmm.
the picture that the little girl Nivea keeps of her dad. It's those really intimate, personal moments
mm-hmm.
that people feel like that's what people experience that are going through this.
Right.
And the headlines have been about budget cuts, statistics from the health department about overdoses,
mm-hmm.
almost like cold and analytical reporting. And this isn't to disparage my, you know, fellow reporters. I've done this kind of reporting too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the community just didn't see it that way. They saw it as a lived experience, not a statistic.
Okay. Sure.
And being there, putting the time in, and, you know, working on that kind of community-based reporting really kind of showed me that a lot of times in, you know, in journalism, we come in with a set of assumptions that might not really reflect the way that the people we're reporting on
mm-hmm.
See the situation. And I think it's important for the story to resonate in the community you're reporting on.
I just want to remind listeners that it's 4:45. You're listening to a special edition of Valley Voices. We just finished hearing an hour-long documentary called Enduring Addiction, which is about heroin addiction in New Mexico, produced by former KDNK reporter Ed Williams. And Ed has joined me on the phone right now. You know, one of the questions I had is, why do you think the mayor of Espanola would not talk to you?
That's a great question. I don't have the answer to that. I don't know if she was just too busy, but I don't think that could be because, I mean, I was working on this for 6 months, and I don't believe that the mayor of a town of 10,000 people didn't have 10 minutes to give me to write about something that's obviously really important.
Mm-hmm.
I can't answer that question. I don't know why she wouldn't talk to me, but she clearly didn't want to.
Mm.
But, you know, I mean, the police chief wanted to talk. The people, everybody, you know, felt like this was a story that needed to be told after we kind of broke through the surface. I don't know the answer. I wish I did.
Well, I really thought that the police segment of it was very well done. I mean, the whole thing was well done, Ed, but I particularly liked listening to the police segment, maybe because there was just a lot of ambient sound, but it sounded like those guys, it sounded like they're sort of overwhelmed. I mean, not just for obvious reasons, but they just sound a little shell-shocked, you know, when they're... You know, I mean, how did you find the police? I mean, they were very friendly, but did they really
were open? Yeah, I mean, they were actually really receptive to me talking to them. And you're totally right about them being shell shocked. I mean, I know you've done ride-alongs before, Amy, and
right.
You probably experienced some of this before too. But the things those guys go to really kind of changed my perspective to sit in the police car. That the scene that was in that documentary wasn't the only time that I spent on patrol with the police there. And it's literally every 5-10 minutes there's an emergency call of an armed robbery, you know, of assault, burglary, something just crazy for a town of 10,000 people. Isn't that about what Glenwood
yes
has about 10,000 people?
A little less than
yeah,
that.
I mean you can imagine if there's you know, assaults with AK-47s, you know, just the overdoses daily. I mean, it just, I got really empathetic with the police just because they're so understaffed and it's just impossible for them to deal with this, you know, kind of the hand that they've been dealt. And of course, you know, you talk to the community and there is mistrust, there is, you know, resentment with the police department, the same kind of issues you find anywhere. I guess you don't make any friends arresting somebody.
No.
But yeah, they're especially really weighing over their head.
Yeah, if you're confiscating their drugs, you don't make friends either, really.
No. I mean, there's one, you heard in the story, there's one narcotics detective in that town, and it's got some of the highest drug trafficking activity in the United States. You know, when the CDC started taking numbers about addiction and overdose, that was in the 90s, the only place that had a higher rate of heroin addiction in America was Baltimore.
Hmm.
And now this part of the little corner of New Mexico is way higher than that. West Virginia and some other places have gotten so high recently.
I have a friend who's a therapist in Beckley, West Virginia, and he, you know, we talk about that quite often when we're on the phone because of the coal mining situation there and the lack of jobs. It's kind of the same thing, except there's one thing that you mentioned that I found fascinating, and it's something like generational or cultural post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD.
Right.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, that was something really poignant for me, and I think it made a lot of sense. And it actually is kind of backed up by a lot of the medical expertise that I researched for the story. And basically the idea here is that, you know, drugs take hold, or it doesn't have to be drugs. It can be any kind of social ill when kind of the canvas is right for it. You know what I mean? It's not just an issue of personal decision. It's an issue of just the conditions being right for an epidemic like this to take hold. And what they meant by cultural post-traumatic stress is, you know, this is a part of New Mexico that's absolutely breathtakingly beautiful and ancient, one of the oldest cultures in the country. But, you know, they've gone through all kinds of, you know, post-colonial trauma. I mean,
right.
the the families that are living through the addiction crisis are the same families that were here before the United States took over this part of America. And a lot of them are Native American families. So they were here from the day one. So, mm-hmm. you know, people, there have been, there was, you know, they've endured the Mexican conquest, the Spanish conquest, the conquest of the West by the United States government, you know, the kind of fights between the Pueblo tribes and the Spanish settlers. It's just been a nonstop kind of colonial traumatic experience mm-hmm. that really today is living on in the form of poverty, lack of services. So that was kind of, I think, what they meant by post-colonial or colonial post-traumatic stress.
Right.
Is that what the term, I forget the exact term they used.
He but. Was, well, there were a couple of, but it's cultural PTSD,
cultural,
I think was
right.
one of the guys that you spoke with, the guy who's getting
a
PhD.
I think an analogy is, you know, and not to obviously overgeneralize, but, you know, a lot of people, there's a stereotype of alcoholism on Native American reservations.
Yes.
That's not to say Native Americans are alcoholics or more prone to it, but it is to say that when there's a culture that has been kind of vanquished and defeated and doesn't have, you know, doesn't feel hope for the future, that kind of substance abuse epidemic is... it's very easy for it to take place.
Okay.
And I think that's happened in this part of New Mexico.
Well, I'm wondering if you talked to anyone who talked about how treatment could address that. I mean, it's obvious that in Rio Arriba County, treatment on any level is really hard to come by. And that's true, I think, for the rural West in general. But I'm wondering if anybody mentioned, including... sort of the cultural PTSD or the cultural shame, the generational shame, including that in treatment. Did you find
yeah,
any?
Yeah, there are, you know, well, Lupe's organization, Barrios Unidos, is kind of trying to work on that. Of course, it's a very difficult thing to fix. It's a huge ticket, right? Like, how do you address something that's been going on for hundreds of years? But there are, you know, the recovery center that's in Velarde, north of Española, they have a lot of kind of native sweat lodges, things like that, that are kind of trying to be culturally sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult, though, because I think a lot of times the people that run these organizations aren't the people from the affected cultures.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it would be, I think it would go a long way. I think there's a recognition that, yes, we need to try to address some of the cultural issues going on. But, you know, a lot of the people are from Santa Fe or Albuquerque or PhDs and stuff running the programs. That's a different world than,
mm-hmm.
you know, the people that you heard from in the documentary.
Exactly.
So I think you're kind of hitting it on the head. That's an area for improvement.
Well, it's tomorrow morning. The Sounds of the High Country, you remember our Sounds of the High Country shows.
Of course.
I'm interviewing Paige Blankenbuehler, who wrote a really good piece last month. I think it was published on the 20th of February in High Country News about this same issue happening in Craig, Colorado.
I think I saw that headline. I don't know. I didn't read the article, but I'm vaguely familiar with what you're talking about.
Well, it was a really unusual cover on High Country News because they had, you know, somebody, they had an enlargement of a spoon. Obviously, somebody was in the process of cooking up some heroin, and it was like, whoa, this is on the front of High Country News. But, you know, this is truly an epidemic, that people are calling it, that's happening across the West. And, you know, Ed Williams, public health reporter for KUNM in New Mexico, thank you so much for your work and for talking with me today. And what's next for you after this giant, incredible documentary on addiction?
Oh, gosh. Well,
vacation.
I have a few days of vacation. You know, really, what's happened since the November elections has thrown